Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm J.J. Cooper, joined here today by Matt Eddy. And we've got exciting news. It's the first day of February, first February podcast of the year. But the news in Baseball America world this week, or in the Baseball America offices, is the prospect handbooks are here. We have ours sitting on our desks. If you were one of the people who pre-ordered, you hopefully already have it in your hands. If you don't, it's been shipped from here. It's on the way. It'll be arriving to you shortly. If you haven't ordered yet, though, I guess I ask the question, well, what are you waiting for? You know, but if you haven't, it's time to make that order. You can give us a call at 800-845-2726 during normal business hours, Eastern Time business hours, Monday through Friday. We have people here ready to take your order, or you can just go to baseballamerica.com/store. Reminder, as always, if you order it through Baseball America, you get the supplement, you get the 31st prospect in every organization, so you get 30 more scouting reports. And in addition to that, this year we also have a deal with Top/Bowman that you get a five-card pack of cards, baseball cards, to go with it. So seeing some Mike Zunino, people getting Mike Zunino cards, you know, a lot of prospect cards in that. So,
yeah.
So
it's, and in addition, you get a foreword by David Price.
Right.
One of my favorite features of the new book.
That is true. The foreword is by David Price. So it's got everything you could want, including 900 scouting reports. And who could want, you know, something to keep you busy for the last couple of weeks before the start of spring training, which thankfully is not that far away. But before we can move on to talking about spring training, we're wrapping up our sixth podcast about the team top tens, our final one, because we've now posted the final top tens up at Baseball America. San Francisco Giants were the anchor man, finishing things off with the anchor leg posting up on Wednesday of this week. So now we're going to talk National League West prospects, which, as Matt and I were looking through these, Matt Eddy does the San Diego Padres top 10, but as we were looking through these, we the thing that jumped out was, not a lot of organizations here that stand out as, hey, you know, is this a top five organization? Answer, no.
No,
is this the top 10? Probably not.
Yeah, in terms of impact, I don't think so. We looked at the organization rankings, and most of them fell between 15 and 20, right?
Right, or beyond.
Like the Padres were upper third and the Giants lower third.
Yeah,
everybody else was kind of stacked in the middle.
Right, the Diamondbacks were the highest rated at the prospect handbook time. Now, the thing being, though, is that at the time of the prospect handbook, that included Trevor Bauer. They have replaced Trevor Bauer now with Didi Gregorius, Zeke Sproul,
Nick Ahmed.
Brandon Drury.
Is Lars Anderson still prospect eligible?
If it is, I'll put it this way. That's not changing the ranking. I'll put it that way. But you put all that together, they were, I believe, seventh in the handbook time. They'll probably drop. I would say for all those players they've brought in, taking away Bauer, who was their number three prospect in the organization, but also a number two prospect, actually, I believe, in the organization.
I think that's right.
I'll check my handbook as I say that. But the number two prospect in the organization, a guy who is almost undoubtedly going to be a top – is definitely going to be a top 50 guy, going to be somewhere probably in that 25 or better range. Number two prospect. When our top 100 comes out, you take him away, you add in – of all the guys they got back, they've probably got one top 100 guy, Didi Gregorius. Didi Gregorius is probably not going to be a top 50 guy. He's more of a back end of the top 100. I think all that said and done, they're going to drop a spot, you know, or so I would guess, when we could do our final, our official organization rankings, our final ones, when we look at all the moves of the offseason. But there, I think we both agree, kind of going at this alphabetically, they also stand out because if you said who has the most high ceiling or the most intriguing talent in their organization – even after all these trades, would you agree that's the Diamondbacks of this?
Yeah,
of the West
team? You start out with Skaggs and Archie Bradley, Tyler Skaggs, the left-hander. You know, I think he's going to be 21 this year. Already 5 fastball, 6 breaking ball. You know, chance to be 6 fastballs he fills out. I think this guy's the real deal.
And you're talking about a guy who already has big league time and he, you know, struggled a little bit in his time in the big league last year, 6 starts, but. For the age he was, and you look at just the success he's had kind of all the way coming up through the minors, he is one of the safer guys, I think, right now, pitching-wise, in the minors, that you say, okay, this guy's – it's hard to believe he's not going to be, you know, barring injury, we always have to say with pitchers, but it's hard to believe he's not going to be something in the big leagues. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. Bradley's a tougher nut to crack. You know, you look at his ratio here. He's got 87 hits allowed and 84 walks. You never. It's kind of a strange.
The strike zone was jumping on him a little bit last year.
Well, how optimistic are you on him finding control this year?
I'm still pretty optimistic considering his youth. I mean, that was his first pro season. It was interesting that if we were talking a year ago right now, there was a pretty strong consensus that Dylan Bundy was better than Archie Bradley. But it wasn't that there was a whole lot of separation. Both of them were considered 1-2 as the top high school pitching prospects in the 2011 draft. And then kind of coming out of Archie Bradley had a – everyone has a great instructs. You know, that's our motto around here. You never hear – man, that guy was just lost in instructs. He had no clue what he's doing. Everyone has a good instructs. Archie Bradley's instructional league, the first year he was, you know, right after he signed, was especially good from all the reports we had. From scouts outside of the organization who saw him said, man, he really looked good. He just didn't, you know, Dylan Bundy basically went from, okay, he's pretty much ready, and to the big leagues last year. Archie Bradley spent the year in the Midwest League and was ready, barely ready for the Midwest League. I mean, it was a much tougher slog. That being said, he didn't give up hits. He got lots of strikeouts. You know, the control has to get better. I don't think there's anything we've seen that to make me think that it won't. It just is a young pitcher who's learning how to, you know, he's learning.
I know.
A lot of the subtle parts of the game.
Yeah, for me, for a young guy like this, you're looking for the ability to miss bats, and you worry about the control later. You know, if there's one area you can improve, it's generally that. You generally right. don't find a guy who's striking out 5 for 9 now who graduates to striking out 9 for 9 later.
And one of the things with that is I've had this discussion with scouts before. This is one of the tough things. It's funny, you know, we talk about if you're a scout, and some teams have even gotten away from going with the present tool, you know, that, like for low A and below. But, you know, I've talked about this where you say, like, okay, for a hitter, if you're a guy in low A, you really, realistically, if you're putting a present tool on it, with very, very, very few exceptions, it'd be a 2. Because present tool is what you're going to do in the big leagues. Well, the same thing with pitchers. I've had scouts tell me, when you talk about command, when you talk about a guy who's in low A and you talk about command, I mean, it's a present 2. It's just with very few exceptions again. Maybe Kevin Slowey, when he was in low A, wasn't a 2 command. But that is something that even when guys reach the big leagues, the majority of guys, when they reach the big leagues, if they have average command, they're doing well. The guys who have well above average command as big leaguers usually didn't have that when they hit the big leagues. So I agree with you. That is the tool that you refine, you develop as you come up. But yeah, it's a lot harder to find the ability to miss bats.
Yeah, even at the big league level, you expect pitchers as they mature to lower that walk rate.
And it's kind of
if they're talented.
It's an inverse relationship. Their ability to miss bats goes down usually, and their ability to hit spots goes up. So, you know, if you go to a lot of low A games, you know, if you're listening to this, you probably have noticed this. You can see as much velocity in a good low A game as you'll ever see in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
You will see a lot less good strikes. You know, and so I think that's with Archie Bradley. Now, it's going to be fascinating to watch him this year because he has, hey, congratulations, you're probably going to the California League. You better miss bats there. And
Tyler Skaggs and Pat Corbin succeeded there.
Right.
To
current the good news is that they are in a more –
David Holmberg, too. Must be a lefty thing.
They play in one of the more reasonable of the California League parks. It's not as crazy. Andrew Chafin also.
Yeah.
You know, they've had some success there. I did want to also ask you on this Diamondbacks list, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Adam Eaton. What do you think he's going to do? I think you're on
I'm the low man on him. I think everybody else likes Eaton a lot more than I do. You can give the dissenting opinion.
Okay.
To me, he's more of a tweener. I just don't think he's got the pure – all right, first of all, he's got 2 power.
That's fair.
No power at all. No projection. He's 5'8". He makes tons of contact and he's fast. That's good. But I'm not sure he's quite the elite defender necessary to start in center field on a good team with that hitting profile.
Let me compare him to Brett Gardner coming up. Not Brett Gardner now, but Brett Gardner when he was coming up through, you know, hitting the big leagues. Is that a fair comparison
or?
You know, I just think of when you think of guys with very little power, athleticism, speed, and bad on ball skills.
It could be. Gardner's a pretty extreme outlier.
Right.
I think Gardner's a little more physical, you know, at the same stage, and now he's probably a little more explosive in speed.
Right. But I do think that's
That is your best case scenario.
That's your best case scenario to me, is that he could be a Brett Gardner type, mm-hmm. is really what stands out to me, is what you, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, that's what you hope for. Now, the good news for him is he's following a guy who, there's no other way to put it, who bat ball skills for Chris Young, very low.
they're just about opposites.
Right. And at some point, I don't blame the Diamondbacks at all. At some point, you have to say, you know what? Okay, it's not coming. You know, we've given Chris Young a chance, and the swing and miss is too much of a problem. The other tools are really not good enough to make up for that. And Chris Young's other tools are pretty good. But I don't mind them. I mean, to me, with Adam Eaton, the key thing is what you hit on, is he going to be an adequate defender? Is he going to be an above-average defender, or is he going to be elite defender? I don't think it's kind of hard to believe that he'll be elite, but it really comes down to, can he be average at least? I mean, because mm-hmm. if he can be average and hit, then you've got something. And he has – Diamondback system, it's tough to get a read on hitters, tough to get a read on pitchers. That's why we think their pitching is so good, is that they're in a lot of tough leagues for pitchers, but also in a lot of good leagues for hitters. But Adam Eaton has hit wherever he's gone. I think he's going to hit for average.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, it's a great story. 19th round guy from Miami, Ohio. That's a great scouting and development job by the Diamondbacks. There's no question about that.
Absolutely, it is. But I think it is. It's going to be. He's one of the interesting guys to kind of what's going to happen in 2013. Because it's even a year ago, I think if you'd have said, "Hey, Adam Eaton's going to be the starting center fielder for the mm-hmm. for the Diamondbacks coming into season," I think. Have been like, really? You know? And now it's kind of expected. The thing that he also has to worry about a little bit is, you know, if he does struggle out, they have another option. Gerardo Parra is essentially now the fourth outfielder, would appear. Well,
if they want to get crazy, Cody Ross.
Yeah,
technically.
I mean, he could play center, but I think...
A.J. Pollock. I mean, they do have other options they could go
to. So he's not going to have this long window to figure it out. He needs to kind of hit the ground running, is I guess what I'm saying.
That's fair.
So it'll be interesting to see, though. It will be interesting to see. But I think we both say, you look at their organization, you look at the top 10, Chris Owings at number 7 is a very interesting guy. Andrew Chafin, great half year, terrible second half, kind of put it together a little bit at the end there, but is an intriguing guy. A.J. Pollock, who's number 10.
Gregorius will play in the majors for a long
time.
Yeah,
Gregorius.
In some role, but that glove, he'll play.
So moving on, we got the Colorado Rockies top 10 next. And... the best way I can put it is there's a couple of guys, and there's at least one guy in here who I just love, but I do think it drops off pretty quickly. The way I can put it is Chad Bettis is number 5. When you have a guy who missed the entire 2012 season, you know, that worries me. And, you know, mm-hmm. when you worry, okay, you have a strained muscle, you know, behind your shoulder that basically sidelines you from spring training through the entire season, I'm concerned. I have some trepidations there. That's like I want to see that guy back on the mound before I'm ready to be all in on Chad Bettis. But but David Dahl, on the other hand, hey, sign me up. You know what stands out from this organization to you?
The position players are 2 and 3, the two high school guys.
David Dahl, Trevor Story.
Yeah, Trevor Story. Trevor Story is very interesting to me. Hit for extreme power in the Sally League last year.
Admittedly, in a great park to do it.
And especially
Asheville.
He's going to be an infielder of some stripe. If it's third base, you know, I think he's still got the bat. But Dahl, as you mentioned, had probably, I don't know, the best debut we've seen in how long?
Whew.
By a high school player?
One of the ways to put it is that high school players for a long time haven't had a chance to do this.
Yeah.
You know, before, you know, a year or two ago, before the new draft rules, it had been, well, you're sorry, you can't sign until the signing deadline. Okay, you can get 12 at-bats. Now let's shut you down for, you know, get ready for instructs. Now he gets to go out there and hit 379, 423, 625. Admittedly, good hitters league,
yes.
Pioneer League.
The best hitters league.
The best hitters. That being said, usually when we talk about that, we're usually talking about 22-year-olds who's like, well, yeah, okay, he tore that league up. We're not usually talking about first-year high school guys.
I love this distribution. 22 doubles, 10 triples, 9 homers. That's awesome.
And the best way I can put it, he's number 2 on this list. you know, when I'm putting together my personal 150 for the top one, the top our top 100, David Dahl is going to be above Nolan Arenado on mine. And that's nothing against the top 10 list or anything like that. But David Dahl, to me, like Nolan Arenado, who is number one on the list, Nolan Arenado is, I think, has a chance to be a very solid big leaguer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he, kind of a setback year last year. Some concerns when your front office of your own team is saying, well, this guy's just not mentally ready to make the jump. That's, they don't usually say that publicly. things like that. So that's at least a little bit of a cause for concern. David Dahl, I think, could be, I mean, a superstar. I think you don't want to get too crazy over one, you know, half season in rookie ball. That being said, this isn't a guy who came out of nowhere. This was a guy who was considered one of the top talents in last year's draft. He basically profiles to hit for average, to hit for power. He can run. He can field. I mean, he gets thrown out way too often. He is a guy who could be a five-tool guy.
Mm-hmm. Who do you compare him with? Like, if you're thinking of recent high school, is he Jay Bruce? Is he, I mean, like, lefty high school outfielders?
Jay Bruce, to me, is, you probably have to go back to that 05, you know, class. It's like, pick your.
Is he like a lefty McCutcheon? Lefty hitting Andrew McCutcheon? Is he going to be that explosive?
You know, but, you know, I mean, he could be. I think they're, you know, he's got a little bit better, bigger frame than McCutcheon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a little taller. So, I think you look back at those 05 guys, and I don't want to go too crazy on it because, you know, we are very early, you know, it was a great year, but it was, I mean, there were, to put it this way, Jesse Winker, Reds, you know, outfielder, first year guy, had a really good year in the Pioneer League as well. Not that good, but really good. And I'm not going that crazy about Jesse Winker. The things that add up are that David Dahl does that while playing a good, you know, he looks like he could be a very good hitter, hit for average, and could be, I mean, as our scouting report says, you know, could be a gold glove center fielder. Well, that's, you know, that's a heck of a combo. And it's hard not to get really excited about that.
I kind of like Ryan Wheeler coming in here at number 10, just based, I mean, they gave up nothing to get him. They gave up Major League lefty Matt Daly, you know, the lefty reliever who the Diamondbacks were hot for some reason. And the Rockies get Wheeler here, who, you know, he's got pretty much, you know, fives across the board. And if he gets the ball in the air in Colorado, like,
the thing I like about him is that the position versatility too.
Yeah.
So if you look at Ryan Wheeler, he's not going to you know, spring training with the chance really to win a starting job, but he can play third, he can play first, he can play in the outfield to where he could have a chance to be, you know, a useful bat off the bench. And those guys have value. If you look at what I hate to keep bringing up Reds, but he's not this good. You know, he also, you know, bats lefty, but he's not this good. But if you see what Todd Frazier did last year, where whenever the Reds had an injury,
mm-hmm.
Hey, Todd Frazier, you can start there. Well, that's kind of what Ryan Wheeler can do a little bit of. Again, not as good at a lower level, I think, than Frazier. But okay, we need a third baseman for, you know, a couple of weeks. Well, he can do that. You know, you need a first baseman for a couple of weeks. He could do that if you need to. You know, we need a guy to play 2 days a week in the outfield. He can do that. I mean, again, that's why he's 10 on this list. Is I don't think necessarily that he ever is going to be a, you know, an above average regular or anything like that. But he's a very useful guy. The one other guy I wanted to touch on this that I would, you know, there's some interesting pitchers on here. Chad Bettis, number 5, is one of those who's interesting for not all the, you know, great reasons. But Tyler Matzek, who's number 8, is equally as interesting because that's been a fascinating career already for the 2009 first rounder. He, you know, came out of the draft, was considered, you know, a truly one of the elite pitchers in that draft. Shows up, and really in 2011 it all fell apart to the point where they sent him home midway through the year so that he could work with his high school, not his high school coach, his pitching instructor from his high school days. And what you saw in 2012, you saw some signs. I mean, it's a lot better than it was in 11. And he was pitching in a very difficult league, again, the California League. But you're still seeing a lot of wildness. The stuff varies from being really good to being, you know, average. It's are you a Tyler Matzek believer at this point, or are you more of probably not?
You know, with lefties, there's a lot of times there really just aren't any rules. And there's... You know, there's always going to be a role, you know, for a left-hander who throws hard. You know, you have a couple good months in AAA, you could be in the big leagues in the bullpen, you know?
Yeah, and so...
It's just, you just can't ever give up on these guys. I wouldn't say that I'm hugely optimistic, but, you know...
No reason not to bump them up a double A and see what happens.
At the same time, yeah. It's a left-hander rule.
Now, moving on to the Dodgers, the best way to put it is this Dodgers list looks a lot better because Frank McCourt's no longer the owner. And the best way I can say that is because I feel pretty confident that there's a couple of players on this top 10 who would not be there if you didn't have new ownership that's quite willing to spend money. You know, starting at Hyunjin Ryu, if you go back to really old podcasts, if you want to do the research, because we leave all our podcasts up there, I mean, going back to, I think, 2006, go back to the World Baseball Classic podcast where John Manuel and I were talking about, you know, Hyunjin Ryu and just how impressive he looked at times, and we're both fans, and you know, he moves right to number one on this list. Yasiel Puig, Cuban, you know, the Cuban who came over last year, number two. That's really you take those two guys off this list, and this list would be not nearly as interesting, I guess would be the way to put it.
That's quite fair. And after them, you have Corey Seager, first round pick this year, and Jock Peterson, number four, the outfielder from the 2010 draft, who was in his second full year last year.
And then you go after that, you go first rounder, and Zach Lee, 2010 first rounder, Chris Reed, 2011 first rounder. This system drops off pretty quick. That's not surprising. I mean, there was a pretty good long stretch there. Again, when you're ranking bad owners in Major League Baseball history in the modern era, Frank McCourt's not going to rank on the good owner list. I'll put it that way. They didn't spend a lot of money for several years there, especially internationally. They spent almost nothing. And they were relying on some excellent scouting and kind of scouring through the bargain bin to try to and then you throw on top of that they made several trades last year that ended up sending talent away to bring in big leaguers. And so there's an understandable reason why the system drops off pretty quickly for the Dodgers. I do think, though, you know, at the top end, I think is a solid middle of the rotation starter. I think before we started the podcast, I put it as that less upside but more certainty maybe than Tyler Skaggs, kind of that guy. Not body types are entirely different. Hyunjin Ryu is a much bigger guy.
You think there's any chance he makes a Darvish-like impact?
No.
You don't think he's quite that
power-oriented? His stuff's not that power-oriented. It's more of the comps that we got back. I remember talking to scouts back, you know, with World Baseball Classic, was that 2010? Was more like, think David Wells. You know, that was kind of the thing that jumps out, and I think that's partly because he's big, and I don't mean big in 6'8" big. I think more round big. But the thing about him is that he knows how to pitch, really. I mean, his fastball's good, and, you know, if everything breaks together, he could be a very solid number two. In that rotation, they're not asking him to be number one. They've got a number one in Clayton Kershaw.
And they have a number two in Greinke.
Right, they got a number two in Greinke. He is in a perfect situation to come in. The Rangers needed Yu Darvish when Yu Darvish arrived to be their ace. The Dodgers don't. And that's really good for him. Now, the interesting thing with that is that, you know, Yasiel Puig, if everything breaks right, could move pretty quickly, except for one problem. They don't have a whole lot of room in the outfield right now. Maybe they won't, you know, move him that quickly. But I would not be shocked at all to say by the end of the year that you could be wondering, okay, is Puig ready to, you know, ready to make the jump to the big leagues? And that's coming off of almost no at-bats last year.
Man, and they have first base block, too. It's a very, very strange setup they have. So is there any prospect more likely to be traded?
No, I think at some point, you know, I mean, they have some guys who I think you have to first see, you know, you have to see if Carl Crawford is...
Ethier and Crawford have huge deals. I mean,
right.
They're going to be tough to move. Not impossible, but difficult.
If you're making $320 million on your TV deal, which have been approved yet, but if that happens, you can eat a lot of money on deals without really even noticing it. So if Puig's better than those guys, I don't think that they're going to trade Puig, but, you know. I do think Jock Peterson, on the other hand, if I'm him, I would not be buying a house in L.A. yet. I want to see – I hate to be too skeptical because I think he had a very good year. I do want to see him do it in Double-A this year because I worry a little bit that may have been a little bit inflated by playing in the Cal League.
Yeah, from the Pioneer League a couple of years ago, the most interesting comp I got on him was Gerardo Parra. Just a solid left-handed hitting outfielder who can play all three spots. No tool jumps off the page. Major league ability, not necessarily profile power.
I'm absolutely behind that. If you're thinking that, I'm all behind it. If you're thinking much more than that, I'm not yet there. You know, personally, from the scouts I've talked to. So
I kind of like him in that way.
Now we move on to the Padres, which, as you said, you know, I'm speaking here with the author of the Padres Top 10, Matt Eddy. And you had an interesting decision because the best way I can put it is that this is one of the rare teams that I think you could argue anyone in the top five, on the top five on this prospect list, which to get, you know, catch you up, if you haven't seen our top 10 on this, Casey Kelly, Max Fried, Jed Yorko, Austin Hedges, Reimer Liriano. Is it fair to say any one of those top five could have been in consideration for number one? Or is that being too strong on Hedges and Liriano?
At various points, I considered each of the top four for the number one spot. And really what it came down to was risk tolerance. If you want to say who has the highest ceiling, I think Max Fried, the lefty they took seventh overall this year, or Austin Hedges, the catcher from the second round last year. If you could accept the risk of those guys being, you know, in the low minors based on their ceilings, I think you could make a case for them at number one. Whereas if you wanted a little more certainty, Casey Kelly or Jed Yorko would be your man. And
if you want a little bit of both, you could, you know, like I'm a Reimer Liriano fan more than I think most. Partly just because I remember, you know, and you don't want to be too colored by, you know, by first person observations, but I remember the first time I saw him and went, wait, that guy stole 50 plus bases in the Midwest.
Looks like a linebacker.
He is huge. Now, and I was impressed in that the thing that when I was talking to scouts about him last year, they said was, is, you know, hey, I worry how that approach is going to play at higher levels. He wasn't great at Double A, but he wasn't terrible. He kind of found himself a little bit there after, you know, after his promotion. You know, I understand why he's five on this list, but that's a pretty good sign to be fifth on this list because I think he could be a top 100 guy.
Yeah, he could be. The best explanation, you know, when you talk about his over-aggressiveness at the plate, that just seems to be his general demeanor. And the best explanation I got on that was baseball, you have to be selectively aggressive, you know. There's a time to unleash that, but it's just not on, you know.
Right.
And it's not with no balls and no strikes.
Right. And really what it comes down to is, can he figure that out?
Can he get to a point where he's seeing 2-0, 2-1 counts.
If he does,
3-1, you know.
We saw it. We saw it in the Cal League, Carolina League All-Star game.
No one doubts his power, his speed, his range, his arm. It's just about
the hit tool.
Being able to hit.
The world of prospect list is littered with guys who the one question is the hit tool. That's not the question. There are guys who figure it out. There are a lot of guys who don't.
And you look at Jorko, he's got the hit tool figured out. He can play third. He can play second, at least early in his career. Not at a high level of proficiency.
Second base has become, there are teams who view second base very much as an offensive position. If you can knock the ball down and throw it to first, you're okay.
Yeah.
And he can do that. Now, Kelly, I guess the question I'll ask you is the story always with Casey Kelly has always been, the stuff looks good. You look at it, you know, he's athletic. You see all that. And last year was really kind of an injury-plagued year, so we don't really, you didn't really get a great read on him one way or another last year, but why doesn't he, we talked about missing bats earlier. He missed more bats last year, actually, in his very small sample.
It was one per inning for the first time in his career.
What did something improve? Did something change? Or why is it in the past he struggled to miss bats? Or do you think he's, what we saw last year, do you think that's part of a trend that he's figuring that out?
I think he started throwing the curveball with more power, and that got more swings and misses. He was around the zone a lot last year too. I mean, he walked 13 guys all year, so he's got very strong control. He's an extreme ground ball pitcher, and that in the major leagues, there's like a dozen pitchers who had a higher ground ball rate than him. Misses bats now. He's big. He's athletic. He's going to improve the changeup command just based on how he repeats his delivery and his athleticism. I think he's a pretty good bet. You know, we've already seen him have a couple good starts in the majors. You know, and to me, that sealed the deal. That major league experience, that's what put him ahead of Fried and Jurko for me.
The thing that stood out to me also is that one of the things I liked about the Padres system was I feel like it's a pretty deep system. Like, that, you know, the best way I can put it is that 15 going into our prospect handbook. 15 is Brad Boxberger. Brad Boxberger had a solid year at the big league level after coming up last year as a reliever last year, and he's number 15. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really have like 15 strikeouts per nine this year. Just a crazy swing and miss rate.
Jeff Decker, you know, who is kind of questionable. I mean, there's a lot of questions there, but 23rd. Travis Jankowski, 21, who, you know, is an intriguing guy. I feel like that there is a good bit of depth in the Padres system, that you have five guys who could, you know, who can contend for the top 100, and then you have a lot of guys who could have roles in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
I think that's fair. It's an organization that knows how to develop pitchers for its bullpen, that's for sure.
It doesn't hurt to have the, you know, to have the park they have too. That helps. Yeah. That helps pitchers develop.
It instills a lot of confidence.
You know, I, again, when
but who's going to be playing shortstop? Averth Cabrera, Logan Forsyth.
Yeah, that's the question. But it's like we talked about, you know, last year with Robbie Earl and Joe Wheeler with the trades. Like, yes, this is a team you want to be traded to if you are a control pitcher who doesn't walk guys and can get you know, hit a little hard by the home run at times. Yes,
fly ball
this
pitches.
Is where you want to be.
Yep.
And that moves us to the Giants, which, hey, you know, they're the champs. They have a very intriguing number one prospect in Kyle Crick, who I think by mid-season this year, you know, really could be among that group. I mean, there's a lot of intriguing pitching, but he's a part of that group of very intriguing pitchers.
Oh, show me a high school pitcher the Giants have ever developed. Come on.
Yeah, I know. You just got to be skeptical about it. Organization that's had Matt Cain and, you know,
Bumgarner and
Zach Wheeler. We can just keep going, you know. Yeah. After that, it drops off pretty quick. Joe Panic, number two. The best way I put it is this: I don't think, if I'm putting together a top 100 today, I don't know if Joe Panic's on it. Probably not, in fact, actually. I mean, if I'm going through shortstops, he's not in my short list of the top shortstops in the minors.
Tough call. And then Gary Brown is blocked by Pagan now, and I don't know.
And Gary Brown, you know, I think is solid, but, you know, he's probably not going to be a star. You've got Heath Embry, who could be a useful reliever, you know, on this list. You've got Roger Kieschnick, who's probably, you know, I think he's kind of, I mean, Roger Kieschnick, I think it's fair to say he's got to prove he's going to be more than an up-and-down guy, and he's in the top 10. I mean, I don't want to be too harsh on it, but does that seem fair to you? I mean, I don't think he's a guy right now that you can point to and say, that guy is definitely going to be a solid big league regular.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it drops off pretty quick.
Yeah, the big thing being Crick at number one and, you know, Blackburn at number six, the guys from the low-A staff. They had Edwin Escobar, the left-hander. I guess he's just outside of the top 10.
Just, you know, and then, and you know, Alberto Mejia, who was, you know, who also was on that Augusta staff. So yeah, the Augusta pitchers were the most interesting part of the Giants organization from a prospect standpoint last year. I thought now we'll get to see them be, you know, they'll largely be together again this year, and San Jose should have one of the better rotations in the minors. I think that's fair to say. The thing is that if you're not going to be seeing San Jose in the Giants system, the rest of it might be a little less less interesting. Chris Stratton, I mean, I don't want to, you know, we need to mention him because, you know, you are talking about their first rounder from last year. He could be pretty good. I just think overall, they were 28th, I think, when we did our prospect handbook rankings. There's a reason for that. And again, hey, that's not a knock on the Giants. If you're a Giants fan listening to this, I don't know, for one, you're not going to get any sympathy at all from anyone else going, oh no, our farm system's 28. That's fine. You just won your second World Series in the last, you know, in a not too long, you know, not too distant span. You know, the reality is that they're a veteran laden team. That's their approach that they do. They've used, I mean, this list would look a lot better if they had Zach Wheeler there.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say, if they have Wheeler and Tommy Joseph, one, two, that moves them up to like 15.
Oh,
at least.
Yeah. At least. I mean, that would be the difference. But you know what? If you make those moves and you win World Series, that's okay.
Yep.
I mean, Hunter Pence didn't have a great year there, but if Hunter Pence isn't there for the playoffs, you know, what do they do? I mean, maybe they don't win the World Series. That's worth a Tommy Joseph. I don't think there's any question of that. Is anyone else stand out on this, or I mean, is that you kind of agree with that assessment?
Mike Kickham is an interesting left-hander. You know, at Double A this year, misses bats, has some power pitches. I mean, I'm not more like a four type starter.
But
I think he has major league arm.
But well, so that will put a bow on our 2012/13 preseason top 10 podcast. But don't worry, we'll be podcasting frequently coming forward. We will have to give you kind of a roadmap for what we have coming up on the site. Next week we'll have other stuff too, but we'll have Caribbean Series coverage. But the main thing on the site over the next week will be that we have our college preview is rolling in full swing. We'll have all of our region previews next week, which are extremely in-depth looks at every Division I conference, the top players and the top draft prospects, the top teams, our predicted order of finish, our notes, all that. We'll have features as well next week. The week after that, we will also then roll out, the projected field of 64, where we help Aaron Fitz sees the which teams are going to be in, which teams are going to be out. And then it's hard to believe it's not that far away. Well, actually, it is not hard to believe at this point, but we'll have also coming up that next week we'll have the top 100 prospects, the issue we're starting to work on really soon here now. We just put the college preview to bed, so it's top 100 time. We'll have at least one, maybe 10 podcasts, around the top 100.
A podcast about each player.
Yeah. Okay, and number one we'll have, the number 28, number 92 prospect. We'll do a... Hey, we could. I mean,
we'll count them down. Yeah, stay tuned for those 90s.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would drop subscribing to our podcast if we did that. Probably, I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. You can tweet at JJCoop36. You can always at Baseball America or at Eddie MK.
Yeah.
You can tweet us. If we're wrong about that, and you want to hear the top 100 podcast when you do a 100 podcast about it. But also, we're working on the World Baseball Classic preview. I'm thrilled about that. I'm working on a feature on Team China, but also kind of notes and news about players to watch from all the Asian clubs that are going to be in the World Baseball Classic. Some very intriguing prospects that we will be seeing in the U.S. probably in years to come. They'll be playing for Japan, Korea, Taiwan/Chinese Taipei, whichever one you want to call them. Maybe not so much for Team China. So we'll have podcasts about that coming up. And then we're going to have a regular prospect, and if there's any significant other trades, I can't imagine at this point that we're going to have any more big trades before spring training starts. But if we do, we'll talk about it. We'll podcast about it. So thank you, as always, for the download. Thank you for if you have already bought your prospect handbook. We really do appreciate it. It's one of the most fun things that we get to do every year. But we only get to do it. We only get to put that in your hands because you buy it. That's how this, capitalistic system works. So we really do appreciate that, and thank you for that. And so for Matt Eddy, I'm JJ Cooper. Thanks for the download, and we'll see you next week.